Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Howard Behar has spent much of his professional life transforming Starbucks from a chain of 28 stores in the Pacific Northwest into an international coffee business. A manager attending a recent AMA seminar shared his experience as a Starbucks customer.
What really caught me about Starbucks, number one, was the ability to go in there and always get everything exactly the way I wanted. That was the first thing. And the second thing, very recently, was Starbucks closing for 3 hours to retrain all their staff. That struck me as an organization that really cares about their resources because they took the time, closed every store to train all their employees properly. And it also sends a message that they're concerned about their customers. They're doing the best that they can to improve their processes and keep on top of their performance improvement so that image is displayed out to the customers. I was in Starbucks this morning. Just out of curiosity, I asked the guy behind the counter. I said, how do you think you guys did by closing for 3 hours and retraining the staff? He said, you know what? He said it brought out things in other staff members that you didn't realize because now you're forced to perform in front of other staff members. He said it pointed out the areas that needed improvement, how to do that improvement, and then how to make it measurable. So he believed, and I also believe, that it was a great thing. And I think it's really pushed Starbucks up over the top.
In a new book titled It's Not About the Coffee, Behar, the founding president of Starbucks International and former president of Starbucks North America, tells of the strategies he used to build the business into the success it is today. Welcome to the program, Howard.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
In your book, you speak of words like mission and pride and service, the leadership tenets you used at Starbucks to help build one of the greatest brands in the world. Now, converting these tenets into a corporate culture that inspires and empowers the workforce is a challenge that basically all managers face. Can you offer to the people who are listening right now any specific advice for making this happen within their organization?
Absolutely. You know, everybody wants to have a mission statement. That's part of the textbook deal today. The problem is you could change the name on most mission statements from the company or nonprofit or whatever it happens to be, and it could read like anybody's mission statement. Part of that is okay, but it needs to be unique. There needs to be some pain and energy and effort and anxiety over the creation of your mission statement and your guiding principles. You really need to be thinking about what they mean. The more you do of that, the more that you really drive down in, the stronger that those mission statements will be, and the more people will act on them and make them their own.
So you're not anti-mission statement, but you are walking the talk. Now, on February 26th of this year, at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, all 7,100 Starbucks locations in the United States closed their doors for 3 hours to introduce baristas to a new set of standards for making coffee drinks. Now, to outsiders, this seemed like an unprecedented move, but after reading your book, it aligns with your philosophy of building trust, and in this case, demonstrating that you aim to get it right for every customer that walks through the door. Now, can you expand on this concept and how you built trust with both Starbucks employees and customers?
The idea of closing the stores got a lot of press, but we were doing it for a particular reason. We wanted everybody's attention, the whole organization. When you have mission statements or value statements and it says this is who we are, there's a cost that goes with that. It's not free. And we spent a lot of the company's resources closing stores down for 3 hours on that night. But we wanted to make sure that everybody understood what it was all about and what we were trying to do. And I totally credit Howard Schultz, who's the chairman and CEO, for making that happen. But it just goes back to what we were talking about before. Mission statements, guiding principles, they're living documents. If you say you want to be one of the best coffee companies in the world, then that requires some actions to go with it. That means that you're going to invest the kind of resources to get that done. And when you see that you have a problem or an issue, if you're not performing up to the level of your own expectations, forget customers for a minute. You got to do something.
So it's sort of like hitting the reset button.
Absolutely. We're all kind of the same way. Don't we all need to just stop once in a while and evaluate what we're doing and think about where are we doing things well and where are we not? What do we need to do to change it? And don't we all need to sometimes go take a class or have a mentor talk with us or go to an AMA session or whatever it is to refresh ourselves? That's all this was about. This was just on a huge scale.
Within that context, it made total sense. How do you not be a victim of your own success? What are your attitudes and opinions of encroachment upon your space, of copycats in that space, or other competitors? Some of them are very visible and they market very heavily. How do you react to the shifting playing field?
Competition is not new, okay? Everybody thinks this is new. If you go back to the early beginnings of Starbucks, we're selling a cup of coffee for, I can't remember the price then, but it was 20 years ago, maybe a buck and a quarter for a cup of drip coffee. You know how much drip coffee the no-name competitor was selling? I mean, zillions of cups. Coffee has been sold in this country for a lot of years. We were competing at that time. It was more difficult then than it is now because we were trying to change a culture, not only to pay more for a quality cup of coffee, but our taste profile. You got to like coffee to drink our coffee. Most of the coffee that was being served at that time was basically brown water. So this is not new. A lot of coffee has been sold in this country. What's new is there's more publicity about it, more surrounding, and the press loves to talk about it, and it's all the same. Now, having said that, we got to continually move forward and change and get better and do different things. We got to be the lead in the coffee industry. I think we were a little sleepy for a while, but we were growing fast, and maybe we weren't looking at some things that we wanted to look at. But I think that's the natural evolution of events. Not only in companies' lives, but in human lives as well. And are we going to have more competition? You bet. Are we going to have to be better? You bet.
Many people have heard about the concept of open forums at Starbucks. Can you describe what these are, how they work, and what type of impact they have on the operations of Starbucks?
Open forums at Starbucks are very important. And the funny thing about it, even in a company like Starbucks, where we've used them for a long time, there's been an ebb and flow to open forums. You know, every once in a while, somebody decides, hey, we shouldn't spend the money, and they cut back on them, but we always seem to come back. I brought open forums with me from another company. What open forums are about is just creating dialogue. It's an open, honest dialogue. No questions are off the table. Anything can be asked, and we both learn. Open forums, many times, are a release valve for pressure inside the organization. Just having the ability to exchange ideas or thoughts with people at all levels in the organization really make a difference. Sometimes, I remember in the early days when I'd started them, people were very uncomfortable. And I'd start out every open forum by saying, hey, there are no questions that you have, no thoughts, anything that you might say. Nothing's going to hurt my feelings or embarrass me. Open forums are about open, honest dialogue. Anything you want to know that I have access to, I will give you the information, and if I don't, I'll figure out how to get it to you. It makes such a huge difference. Lots of organizations do it. They may call them different things, but they're really important.
I guess part of the success of that type of thing is just even if people don't utilize it, they know it's always there.
I think it's really critical to use it and to make it really open, honest, truthful, and nothing is off limits.
You also mentioned in the book that the word yes is the most powerful word in the world. Though many times getting past no, especially in the service environment that you're in, is very difficult. Can you give us some examples of how managers can apply yes to their advantage?
When I first started at Starbucks, I noticed there was kind of an arrogance about us. We knew more about coffee than anybody else, and we were going to let them know that we did. I kept thinking, this is different. But when you think about it, it's kind of like the wine connoisseurs teaching you about wine. You know, the people that do single malt scotches, same kind of thing, and coffee kind of fits into that deal. And I kept talking about the idea that we need to be accessible. We need to be open. And I remember getting three letters from customers in the early days. We didn't get that many. What amazed me is they all came in within the same week, and they all basically were saying the same thing. They weren't complaining about the quality of our coffee. They were talking about the fact that we seemed a little arrogant. We didn't seem like we really cared about them as human beings, or what I call the yes factor. It's so difficult to do it. We hire young people. Our whole lives we're told, no, you can't do this. No, you're not good enough. No, 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 no. And so we get out into the workplace, and we can hardly wait to use our inalienable rights to use the word no. That doesn't come out in just the word no. It comes out with the roll of the eyes, no. Can't you see I'm busy? Or, why did you ask that question? No. Or, no, we don't have that. And so my point here is, look, the goal of human beings, I believe, should be to find yes in the world, to find ways of helping others get what they need and what they want, to find ways of serving them better. And yes is just the right word. Now, having said that, my wife goes into a Starbucks store. This was about 6 months ago. And she was really thirsty for lemonade. Now, Starbucks doesn't have lemonade just on its own. But we mix lemonade and tea to make an iced tea lemonade. And they come separately. My wife says, can I have a lemonade? And the person behind the counter says, well, can't you read the menu? We don't have lemonade. Young person. And my wife says, well, don't you mix the two together? And she says, yeah, we do that. And so my wife says, I'll have an iced tea lemonade. Just leave out the iced tea. You see, it's this whole deal about always saying no. And look, there's always somebody that comes into your store or asks for something in a fit of anger. And we have to find ways of calming that down. And I don't think in all my lifetime in retail, and I've been working retail for 50 years, that there's really been a time that I've had to say no. I've always found a way.
And the other really cool thing, and then we can wrap up, is how Starbucks has become this music retailer of note.
I love it. You know how that came? One of our store managers in the early days, when I first started in 1989, was playing music in his store that he chose. He happened to have worked for Tower Records or something, and so he would do these cassette tapes and bring them in. And his customers said, God, that's fantastic. How do I get that? And he would make them for him for free. Timothy Jones, he's still there, still at Starbucks. Is it a huge moneymaker for us? No. But we do it because we love the music. We think it fits with what we do. And every once in a while, we do something fantastic.
Well, Howard, I'm sorry we've run out of time here. I do want to thank you for being here today. The title of the book is It's Not About the Coffee. The author is Howard Behar. Thanks, Howard.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's once again time for You've Been Spotted, where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or seminar at one of our 5 executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. And here's Kevin Lee.
I'm talking with participants of AMA seminar, Preparing for Leadership, What It Takes to Take the Lead.
I'm from Foxwood Resort Casino in Connecticut, the largest casino in the world. I am in the leading group as a supervisor, and I would like to advance to the next step. And then I was so happy when I arrived in the class. First of all, it was scary, but a couple hours into class, they make me feel comfortable. That's the best part. A few things that I learned from this particular class was you have to be ready to take action depending on the situation that arrives in front of you. Delegate or direct or collaboration or influence depend on the situation.
Great experience in terms of interaction with the other members of the group. We had to discuss a situation with one of our members and figure out a solution that would actually work for both of us. So you have to negotiate, you have to push your own agenda also a little bit. And so that was a good moment where I could realize the power that I have or the negotiation skills that I have, yes.
Do you see yourself differently in any way after you took this class?
I think I feel more confident as a leader. I will definitely feel more comfortable asking people to do things for me or influencing people to do things for me. And I like the part where we went through influencing with authority. As a leader, you take a role, and I think that was very important learning for me.
Coming from a tech support department where I had excelled, I had the technical attributes, but I didn't have the, per se, leadership and management ability. My takeaway is that I have more of a leadership ability than I thought I did. I do have the skills to become an even better leader, and the class is helping me hone them, especially in terms of politics, influence, and power, where I do have more power and influence than I had ever imagined I did, but it actually took sitting through an exercise to bring that out and be able to articulate that.
What was that exercise?
That was the negotiating exercise and also a self-assessment that took into account every different area that we exercise power in. And when I actually looked in black and white at the areas that I have influence and power in, it just stood out at me that I do have a lot more power than I thought I did.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback. So please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.